You are listening to the Freedom Archives Podcast, a monthly transmission of voices, visions, and action committed to social justice. The Freedom Archives is amongst the largest repositories of audio and visual documenting progressive cultural, social, and political movements. Through its efforts, the Freedom Archives helps preserve the past, illuminate the present, and shape the future.
We are aware of the fact that the opposition uses the kill off the head principle, kill the body, and we've set up safeguards against that sort of thing. Well, I could die tomorrow, but there'll be 200 or 300 people to take my place.
Not many years ago, America's prisons rebelled. Why? And what does this forgotten history tell us about the prisons and struggle for freedom today? In this episode, selections from the Freedom Archives CD, Prisons on Fire, George Jackson, Attica, and Black Liberation are featured. In the late 1960s and early 1970s, inmates in prisons across the United States were organizing to change living conditions in these institutions. Abuse of prisoners was a widespread problem. So was the nature of imprisonment. In some cases, inmates were given one shower per week and one roll of toilet paper. From New York State to California, prisoners, families, and supporters were demanding change. On September 9, 1971, in response to a long fight over human rights and the assassination of George Jackson, prisoners in New York's Attica prison seized control of the facility, taking 33 correction officers hostage. They broadcast their demands to the world. Who was George Jackson, and why would the assassination of a prisoner in California resonate across the country all the way to the East Coast? The Freedom Archives shares George Jackson's story and gives context to the uprising.
In 1960, at the age of 18, George Jackson was accused of stealing $70 from a gas station near Los Angeles. Though there was evidence of his innocence, his court-appointed lawyer maintained that because Jackson had a record, two instances of petty crime, he should plead guilty in exchange for a light sentence in the county jail. He did, and instead received an indeterminate sentence of 1 year to life. Jackson spent the next 10 years in prison, 7.5 of them in solitary confinement. Instead of succumbing to the dehumanization of prison existence, he transformed himself into the leading theoretician of the prison movement and a brilliant writer. On January 16, 1969, a few days after a prison guard shot and killed three black Soledad inmates, another guard was found beaten to death.
Soledad was a real intense place.
David Johnson, prison activist and former prisoner.
There had been a lot of killings in the hole. Most of the killings had taken place, they were either racial killings, and then there was a couple of instances where guards had, during cell extractions, had tear gassed and killed inmates. The tension there was real high. The assassinations on the yards of W.L. Nolan, Alvin Miller, and Cleveland Edwards triggered this whole upheaval in the California penal system.
The three, who became known as the Soledad Brothers, were brought in chains and shackles to two secret hearings in Salinas County, and so commenced one of the most extensive legal defenses in U.S. history. The Soledad Brothers were charged with murder, not because there was any substantial evidence of their guilt, but because they had been identified as black militants by the prison authorities. If convicted, they would face a mandatory death sentence.
The Soledad Brothers all have its basis in its connection with the Black Panther Party.
David Hilliard, Black Panther Party leader.
George, who says himself that it was the Black Panther Party more than anything that gave expression to political prisoners as a voice.
Notice had to be served on the Department of Correction, that you just cannot wantonly kill black people without some type of response. Adhere to Malcolm X's philosophy, there's nothing wrong with self-defense. When those brothers got killed on the yard, the courts ruled that it was justifiable homicide. What alternative do you have as a group?
The Soledad Brothers case emerged as a focal point for a growing movement demanding changes within California prisons. It was a time when the American status quo was shaken by black rebellion in more than 100 cities, as well as the mass movement against the Vietnam War.
These ideas were developed against the backdrop of progressive revolutions transforming the globe.
Angela Davis, prison abolitionist and University of California professor.
The struggles of the Vietnamese people, for example, the fact that increasing numbers of countries in Africa were achieving their independence. And today people tend to think about the movements of the 60s as movements that were very separate, nationalists, racially defined, because they're looking at them through the lens of what is generally considered to be identity politics today. But as a matter of fact, the Black Power movement per se was not an exclusive movement. There were people of all racial, ethnic backgrounds involved in that movement. There was a connection with global movements. And there was a connection with the Young Lords, the Brown Berets, the American Indian movement. We were part of a global revolution. There was no question about the importance of making those connections and building those bridges.
The prison was our battleground, our battlefield.
David Johnson.
It wasn't in isolation with what was taking place outside. Because as people start to raise their voices about civil rights violations and human rights violations, then brothers inside, through civil litigation, through protests, strikes, and stuff like that, fought to gain their civil rights and human rights.
George Jackson's writings and organizing inspired prison activism everywhere, but ultimately it was the harsh conditions that Attica had sparked the movement itself. The Freedom Archives explores that period in Prisons on Fire.
We felt that the people should come together and get a better understanding of the conditions here, what was being did to them by the administration.
Attica brother Donald Noble.
So behind this, we would hold meetings in the yard. You know, we'd hold open house, and whoever wanted to come to listen to our political ideology, they were welcome. We didn't bar anyone. This was frowned on by the institution, and they would break it up. In order to reach everyone, we had to get along with different factions here, Muslims and five dissenters and all the other factions, to become one solid movement. We start talking about a strike. They made a lot of promises about conditions would be better, the food would get better, and medical conditions would be better. There was a lot of promises. So everyone laid. They waited, you know. And nothing was did. This is when the Attica Liberation Faction began. We wanted to do things diplomatically. You know, we were seeking reform, although many were not in favor of reform because they didn't believe that the people would listen. So we sought support from the entire population.
People were not interested in waiting for change. They wanted to make change.
Attorney Elizabeth Fink.
The prisoners themselves had gone through a number of different routes to try and change the barbaric conditions that were at Attica. The fact that they were forced to work in the metal shop at 107, 108 degrees for 56 cents a day. The fact that most people were Muslims and the major meat that was given was pork. There was no educational programs. There were no Third World Guards. There was no representation at any kind of parole hearings. There was just nothing. And the situation in the New York State prisons, as in every other prison in every other state, was deeply racist. All the guards were white, and the vast majority of the prisoners were Third World. And up until about 1969, at Attica, for example, everybody stays in their block. They eat with their block, they work with their block, and they rec with their block. And there's only one day a year where you open up the prison, and that was the 4th of July. And they had this institution called Black Ice and White Ice. They'd bring out this ice, and it was white ice, and only the white people could use it. And then they'd bring out this other ice, and it was black ice. That was only the black people. And this lasted until, like, 69.
In the months preceding September 9, 1971, prisoners had written a manifesto protesting conditions and listing grievances. There had been no response from the administration. Then, on August 21, 1971, prison movement leader and writer George Jackson was shot down at San Quentin Prison in California. We hear from Attica prisoners about the response to that assassination.
Things were getting worse. What really solidified things was George Jackson's death. This had a reaction on the people that we were trying to accomplish all along to bring them together. we thought of, well, how could we pay tribute to George Jackson, because a lot of us idolized him, the things that he was doing, the things he was exposing about the system. So we decided that we would have a silent fast that whole day in honor of him. We would wear black armbands. No one was to eat anything the whole day. We noted that if the people could come together for this, then they could come together for other things.
I didn't know anything about, you know, George Jackson. What George Jackson? So we were going to chow that morning, and when we got in the mess, so everything was quiet. Nobody saying nothing. And you're talking about 500, 600, 700 people, inmates. Nobody was eating. So I asked one of my buddies, Carlos. I said, "What's up, man?" He said, "Shh, be cool, right?" I said, "I didn't tell you, man. This dude, George Jackson, in California, killing, and man, there's some kind of solid air. Ain't nobody eating." But then it went away. I didn't eat. We sat down, but it was, woo.
And so they saw the effect of that mass action, joint action, on the administration and the guards, which was total terror. And I believe that it empowered them.
It was a seemingly small repressive incident against a black and white prisoner that triggered the occupation itself. The tensions of the past years and months erupted into a rebellion by prisoners from four cell blocks and the occupation of D Yard by over 1,500 prisoners. Black, Puerto Rican, Native American, and white prisoners joined together over 5 days, proclaiming demands, caring for guards held hostage, and naming a number of prominent progressive activists, lawyers, and journalists as intermediaries as negotiations began. L.D. Barkley read their manifesto.
The entire incident that has erupted here at Attica is not a result of the dastardly bushwhacking of the two prisoners September 8th of 1971, but of the unmitigated oppression wrought by the racist administrative network of this prison throughout the year. We are men. We are not beasts, and we do not intend to be beaten or driven as such. The entire prison populace, that means each and every one of us here, have set forth to change forever the ruthless brutalization and disregard for the lives of the prisoners here and throughout the United States. What has happened here is but the sound before the fury of those who are oppressed. We will not compromise on any terms except those terms that are agreeable to us. We call upon all the conscientious citizens of America to assist us in putting an end to this situation that threatens the lives of not only us, but of each and every one of you. We have set forth demands that will bring us closer to the reality of the demise of these prison institutions that serve no useful purpose to the people of America, but to those who would enslave and exploit the people of America.
The manifesto has been gone out 3-4 months, and nothing has happened. And as I say, the conditions, they just got worse.
These prisoners in front of the whole world organized a structure where they had elections in the blocks and people who represented them, and a conglomeration of white people and black people and brown people, all of whom were empowered. And everybody got to watch that over the 5 days, and it was really intense.
Our demands are such. We want complete amnesty, meaning freedom from all and any physical, mental, and legal reprisals. We want now speedy and safe transportation out of confinement to a non-imperialistic country. We demand that the federal government intervene so that we will be under direct federal jurisdiction. We want the governor and the judiciary to guarantee that there will be no reprisals. And we want all facets of the media to articulate this. We guarantee the safe passage of all people to and from this institution. We invite all the people to come here and witness this degradation so that they can better know how to bring this degradation to an end. This is what we want. We want.
You are listening to a selection from Prisons on Fire, George Jackson, Attica, and Black Liberation on the Freedom Archives podcast. For more information about this recording, or to purchase it and other recordings like this, visit the website at freedomarchives.org. As you've heard, voices such as George Jackson, L.B. Barkley, and others put the Attica prison uprising and the large-scale movements against prison repression into perspective. As negotiations with the state broke down, intervention by New York State would be bloody and remembered for years to come.
Noted radical attorney William Kunstler, one of the intermediaries named by the prisoners, was interviewed just outside Attica State Prison on September 13, 1971. His words proved prophetic.
The commissioner told us last night that he was going through his own ordeal and that he had not made up his mind what to do. We implore him, as we implore him now, to have no force in there. They want to continue to talk. If they go in there, it's going to be a massacre in this prison, and it's on the heads of the authorities if it takes place. And I have nothing but the greatest of sympathy both for the guards and for the inmates inside. Time can produce something here, but a loss of time and a show of force will produce only death and misery, not only here, but I'm sure we'll have a reaction in black ghettos and other areas throughout the country.
Well, is Governor Rockefeller going to come here? Will he consider doing that? Yeah. Do you think he should come here?
He should come. His refusal to come here is a monstrosity, because what he is saying is kill these men. I have no concern. All I want to do is restore law and order. And I think that's a rotten exchange for lives.
What if the observation helicopters is take it off? And with it, now for the first time, one of the large army helicopters is taken off. It is known that the army helicopters are loaded with what is called riot gas, though we're not quite sure what kind of gas it is. Anyway, here come the helicopters, and they are now heading for the prison. One of the large army helicopters now going overhead and over the wall into the prison. Any idea what's going on behind this cover of gas?
I think we're about to witness a massacre. We just tried a man from My Lai and convicted him. And now My Lai number two is taking place. That is an absolute act of bestiality on the part of this man who calls himself an elected official of this state. I hope that the black people of America and the Puerto Rican people of America remember this day.
The helicopter came and dropped the CS gas, and at the exact moment that gas was dropped, they started to shoot. Exactly at that moment, and they cleared the catwalks. They just murdered everybody on the catwalk.
It was a slaughter line, man. It was, people were defenseless. All right? They had sticks and homemade weapons to defend themselves, but this doesn't compare, man, with magnums and carbines. Well, this is ridiculous, you know? The next thing I know is this big helicopter flying over us, and tear gas is coming from everywhere. It's a whole lot of shooting depending on. So naturally, everyone is running for cover, you know? So I'm next to the wall, and I know around me that everyone is hiding their face, and guys spitting rags, putting it to their nose. But what I know is troopers start coming from everywhere. Then I start seeing two different people fall, you know? They were shot. Guys was losing their hand, shot in the head and the neck.
The power structure, led by Nelson Rockefeller,
attorney Elizabeth Fink,
wanted to show to the world, and certainly to the rebellious forces within his own country, with the advice and consent and affirmation of Richard Nixon, what the price is for rebellion. And so they created this assault force, which was there to murder everybody. There were 4,500 rounds of ammunition fired on a cage of people, and there were 1,289 people in it. They used high-powered rifles with dum-dum bullets that entered and exploded on impact. and they used shotguns with 8 to 12 36 caliber bullets with an indiscriminate 50-yard spread. And the reason why they did all that is because they wanted to kill a lot of people.
Attorney Michael Deutsch.
The state came in with an incredible amount of firepower. The prisoners were essentially unarmed, only had makeshift weapons. After they shot people down, people who were surrendering with their hands in their head, who were lying prone on the ground, were shot. People who were running away were shot in the back. They then proceeded to strip everybody and send them through lines of swinging guards with clubs.
They had officers lined up all in the hall everywhere. You know, you were scared to death because you were stripped naked. You know, all you seen and heard was a lot of nasty words calling you all kinds of niggas, you know. They calling the black niggas, they calling the white niggas, they calling the Puerto Rican niggas and so forth, you know.
And took the leaders who they believe were the leaders of the negotiations and put X's on their back.
When I was placed before the war, they put an X on my back. We theorized that this was intentionally done, man, to exterminate us. You know, the state troopers said that if we moved, we were dead people, you know, dead men.
Literally tortured many of them and put them in cells nude, some with bullet wounds still in them. Many didn't get medical care. Many died from bleeding to death because they didn't get proper medical care, even though they knew prior to the time of the assault that they were going to come in that way. They only provided ambulances for the hostages. They had one ambulance for each hostage and no ambulances for the wounded prisoners.
They would line up on two sides. As you would come down, they would hit you with the sticks and the guns, you know, spit at you. If you fall down, four of them would come on top of you and start beating you with the back of the rifle butts, you know. Once you got in the cell, they take you out of the cell. They give you a beat and throw you back in the cell. They wouldn't feed you. When they did feed you, they put their hands in the food, spit in the food, stuff like that, right in front of you, you know. They'd come down and wake you up every few minutes for harassment, shake on the bars, get up, you know. They wouldn't let you sleep. This went on for days. Left the windows open. No clothes. No shoes.
The mass murder that took place on the 13th of September. Cold-blooded, premeditated murder.
Attica brother, Frank Big Black Smith.
I am telling you what I seen with my own eyes. I speak of my dead brother, L.D. Buckley. I know for a fact that he was premeditatedly murdered. I know this.
We are men. We are not beasts, and we do not intend to be beaten or driven as such.
I was taken out of the yard, and I was put on a table, nude. My body, at present, have cigar burns, cigarette burns, all over it. My test coats, at times, bother me now from cigarette butts, sticks, rifles, laying on the table with my head looking up at the catwalk being spit on, hot shells thrown on my body. I tried to cover up with my pillow. Can you imagine 250 pounds getting under a pillow? State troopers and police came by and said, nigga, get out from under that pillow. We wanted you to have a cover. We would give you one. You're going to die in the morning, nigga, so it don't make no difference. Nowhere, whether you freeze or we kill you. Nigga, black power, huh? Black power, huh? That's all was said to me while I was in that room, trying to make me be the animal that he is, to reverse the victim to the criminal to the victim.
You have been listening to Freedom Archives Podcast. This month's feature was Prisons on Fire, George Jackson, Attica, and Black Liberation. Based in San Francisco, California, the Freedom Archives maintain thousands of hours of audio and video recordings documenting social justice movements locally, nationally, and internationally from the 1960s to the present. The archives features speeches by movement leaders and community activists, footage from protests and demonstrations, and coverage of cultural currents of rebellion and resistance.
materials constitute a compelling record of sound and cultural diversity and are thus an invaluable resource for young people, students, teachers, diverse community organizations, media outlets, activists, historians, artists, and researchers. Music, poetry, mixes, production techniques, and sound collages represent an innovative contribution to the art of radio and the cultural ambiance in the 1960s and subsequent decades. To purchase the recording you have heard this program and others like it, get in touch. The Freedom Archives is reachable via its website, freedomarchives.org. By phone, call 415-863-9977. You can also send an email to info@freedomarchives.org. The Freedom Archives, a nonprofit educational organization, welcomes donations in support of its work. Operating on a shoestring budget, the Freedom Archives has assembled the equipment and facilities to begin both the classification of materials and the remastering of its collection. Without the preservation, the very existence of these recordings for future generations will be lost. The Freedom Archives street address is 522 Valencia Street, San Francisco, California, 94110. Again, its website is freedomarchives.org. I'm Madison. Thanks for downloading this podcast, and please tell a friend about it and the works of the Freedom Archives.